Blog Talk Radio.
Radio.
Here we go. All right. And Chris is getting up our comments. Yes, it is absolutely gorgeous up here, Janet. It is wonderful up here. This is where we like running away to this area. Chris's family actually has always been up here as summer people. I'm living up here, and I came up when I started to go to St. Lawrence University, and I would often come over here and do touristy stuff and follow up with them. In fact, Chris and I got married up here.
Just a few miles in the Don River from here.
We're actually on top of the castle that we got married at.
We got married in the castle.
If you saw the picture for today's post, that is Bolt Castle. That is where we got married.
Very romantic.
It was awesome.
And a little haunted as well.
Yeah. And absolutely gorgeous. So if you've never been up in the area, this was the playground of the well-to-do, the rich and famous in the 1800s, late 1800s, early 1900s. It became famous because Bolt Castle actually was considered to almost get bought and become the summer White House.
Yes.
But that was during the Great Depression, and so they decided that was probably not a good investment for the government.
Yeah.
And they didn't do that.
Although, down in Key West, which was hot on the heels of that, but...
Oh, well. It was used more for health reasons.
Yes, there is that.
And it is a gorgeous place.
Yes, it is beautiful. So, anyways. Yeah, so the area we're specifically going to be talking about tonight, we got... three of the
northern counties,
the ones specifically the ones that are adjacent to the St. Lawrence Seaway and the east end of Lake Ontario.
Yeah.
So we got our North Country. Now, if anybody's from upstate New York, you know the North Country is very vast. There's a lot more to it besides just these three counties. So I'm sure that we'll have some stories about some of the other counties.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be a part one.
Yeah, because,
again, because we're also going to talk about our colleges at one point in time, which is part of the North Country from Canton to Potsdam area. Both of our colleges are very haunted. There are four colleges in these two towns alone.
Yes.
Two SUNYs and then the two private colleges.
SUNY, if you're not familiar, State University of New York.
So we're going to talk about those at one point in time as well. I actually have my 20-year picture. Okay, I can hold now.
You just dated yourself.
I did.
On the internet.
I did. I looked good for 20 years out of college, folks. It's good bone structure.
Yeah.
And a slight burn, which my dermatologist will not be pleased with. But, you know, there's a lot of haunted tales up here. Ghost Hunters has actually been up here at least twice that we know of.
We're
going to
talk
about
one of those
places.
Spots. Well, both
of them.
Oh.
But I did include one of their investigations in the second one. I just mentioned that it was investigated.
So what we got for tonight, we got these three counties. We have St. Louis County, we have Jefferson County, and we have Oswego County. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit of background on them because they're out there. They're on the border. I mean, you look across the water and you...
That's Canada.
Canada's out there. And
I see Canada from my window.
So,
not really, but
yeah.
So, a little further north.
So from where we are right now, we are actually in Jefferson County, which is the middle of the three that we're going to talk about tonight.
Yeah.
But
our schools are in St. Lawrence County.
Yep. So we'll start at the north and we'll work our way south. Starting in St. Lawrence County, it is named for the St. Lawrence River, which we're along here, and... that was in turn named for the Christian St. Lawrence of Rome. So, kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the river was discovered by Jacques Cartier on the feast day of St. Lawrence, hence the name.
And Jacques Cartier actually has a state park up here, the Jacques Cartier State Park.
Mm-hmm.
It's not too far from here, actually.
Nope.
So, you know, he's celebrated in this whole area. This area is the river on the north, the Adirondack Park on the south, and a huge river valley in between. So it is a major place for tourism to come up to. We talked about that. A lot of well-to-do people came up here, the Macy's, the department store. They had, the Twin Brothers had big houses up here, literally mirror houses up here.
Yep.
The boxcars.
Stinger.
Yeah,
Singer
Castle.
Sewing machine.
You may actually know Singer Castle from, if you ever seen the movies, Bulls. They actually use Singer Castle as a set for that when the, with the dueling scene outside. Now, the school society actually owns an island up here. It's called Deer Island. When the owner of Deer Island passed away, he actually had to donate, I think it was a third of his wealth to the school society, and well, that it is, he donated that. You know, that's one of the ones that you can go out and hear about it, but on the lookable tour, that sort of thing.
Yeah, they're kind of,
Ida Mae West, the famous singer and actress, actually had a home up here, and there's actually a legend between her and George Wolfe on who invented the Thousand Island strip.
Yeah.
So that's a fun one. but she would perform at Clayton Opera House, which is just across the bay from us here.
Yeah.
So it's one of the well-to-do places for people to come up to.
We're starting to bleed into Jefferson County, by the way. Yeah, so we're going to be talking about Jefferson County, Clayton, again.
Not again, the tourism is what I was trying to get into.
Yeah.
So this has always been a place for fishing. It's always been a place for hunting. It's a place for colleges. We have a lot of mountain retreats. It is more family-friendly. You know, you don't have to do a lot of tourism.
Yeah, not too many tours coming up this way in the
desert. You've got to be hungry to get here to ice fish. You really
are. Yeah. Well, people do it.
Yes, they do.
So. But, yeah, so anyways, Jefferson County. Jefferson County, as you might imagine, was actually named after Thomas Jefferson. Now, the county itself was formed in 1805. So this is right about the time that Jefferson is actually president. So, yeah, they decided to go ahead and flatter the sitting president by naming the county after him.
That's what you do.
Yeah. And this also factored in prominently during the War of 1812. So whereas, of course, back in Virginia, we have a lot of Civil War history.
Revolutionary history.
Up here, we got the War of 1812. The British fleets and the American fleets got invested out here on the St. Lawrence River and on the Great Lakes.
We have a lot of good ships, a lot of sunken ships up here. That'll be another show.
Yeah, and actually part of Jefferson County, a little south of here, is you have the Thomas Becket Harbor. And Becket Harbor was actually during the War of 1812, it was the third largest municipality here in the state of New York. And the reason for that is because a lot of people came here to work at the shipyard that was there. It was actually wound up being the headquarters of the Great Lakes Naval Fleet during the War of 1812. So big naval base there during the War of 1812. But a lot of people, it's kind of one of those historical footnotes today. A very cool place to visit if you ever get the chance.
Yeah, now if we're looking at military history today, where the ancient mountain division is actually based. So there's still a big military presence here. It's just no longer water based, it's now land. But it's always fun to kind of go out driving along the county routes at night and seeing them do their division air routines and some of the other training things that they do at the.
Yes.
It's quite common to see.
Yeah. And then, of course, we have Oswego County.
Yes.
Oswego County has kind of a very prominent area because of its role in the shipping trade even to this day. As ships go up and down the St. Lawrence Seaway here, once they hit the Great Lakes, the port of Oswego and Port Ontario there are the first major ports that ships will pass as they're coming into the Great Lakes.
Yeah, also a place where our SUNY school is, SUNY Oswego.
Yeah.
A lot of people probably heard that actually went there.
Yeah.
That we discovered that in Virginia, so it's kind of fun how we all migrate. So.
Yeah.
But if you've ever heard of Oswego County in the news, it's because you've heard of Tug Hill Plateau. This is known for its wintry weather. It's known for thunder snow. Some of you may recall the episode of 2 years ago, I think it was.
Yeah.
One of the first years Chris and I moved down here, actually. It was the very first year Chris and I moved down to Virginia. Snow, and he was getting ready to pull out and had somebody on his cell phone. I'm like, we're not going anywhere. He's like, what? I can handle this. I'm like, yeah, we're in Virginia, not me.
I left it at that.
So, Tug Hill, actually in 2007, was last on the news for 10 feet of snow.
That was
awesome.
Yeah.
If you don't like snow, don't move to Oswego.
Yeah. Tug Hill, lots of snow.
It's like trying to get down to. your home and a couple of other places. Syracuse Airport.
Always fun. So, anyways, here we are. We're already like 10 minutes into our show.
So, let's talk about Jefferson County. We're going to start in Watertown, which is the biggest big city that's nearest to where we currently are. It's only about, 20 miles from where we are.
Yeah, by your
standards. It's just around the corner.
Yeah.
It's just around the corner.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I used to drive 45 minutes to get to the teacher job. So
yeah.
So we're going to talk about Paddock Mansion. This was built in 1878. It's a Victorian home, and Olive and Edwin Paddock, which one of them built it. They were bankers. They were business entrepreneurs. They were considered to be one of the founding families of Watertown. After Mr. Paddock died, Olive actually stayed in the house until 1922, and that's when she decided to actually turn the house over to the Historical Society to keep it from being downsized to the other houses on her street. That's what would happen to them. She didn't want to see the people at the point. So she donated it to them, and they turned it into the Jefferson Center. And that's where it is today. I want to see today. Now, Olive is still believed to be haunting the Historical Society. She's been spotted in her bedroom window in the upstairs back part of the building. She's been spotted in the front parlor. She is seen by visitors, often wearing a green dress. Not often, from what I understand, like her name, but just a green dress is what's described. Employees report experiencing the paranormal activity as, like, bulk spots. They'll hear disembodied voices, footsteps, feelings of being watched by an unseen entity. Quite a few investigators have actually come to the mansion to do investigations and reports what has been happening to the visitors and to the employees of the museum. So one of the investigators is actually George D. Stavelski.
Just call him George.
Yes. So he has been, at the time of the investigation, he had been investigating for 15 years with his group, and this was the Elixir Paranormal Investigation Group. They had been wanting to get in here, and they finally got in here, and he said he wanted to take an extremely scientific viewpoint of this investigation, using visual recorders, using thermal cameras, thermal temperature scans, those types of things. And then he decided he wanted to bring in one thing that was not scientifically proven, and that is dowsing rods. They also brought in a Ouija board, but they didn't say that they actually used the Ouija board. He said he always brings these two because you never know what something's going to react to. And as you've heard from us before, we don't really endorse the Ouija board thing. I've had too many experiences where things have been released that shouldn't be released, so I stay away from it. But I do use dowsing rods. I'm one of the few investigators around my area that actually do. Because it's not something that's scientifically involved, and again, you never know what might get activity with it. But what he says is that he never has had a paranormal experience while he has been out on an investigation. Other members of his team have, but he personally has never had one. So he's what we call the chiller.
I am the scientific element.
He's the debunker. So what he decided to do with the mansion is he actually held Ghost Hunting 101 class, and this was in October 27th and 28th. Both nights they had the class, taught people how to do the different ghost hunting methods and use the different equipment, and then they went on a guided tour of the mansion where they were informed of things that would happen to the various people in various locations, sort of like what you would see on most of the ghost shows, if you are getting blinded. And then to kind of determine the hot spot. And then we would actually have them use the equipment in the rooms that they were in and kind of work their way through the night that way. What they recorded, they didn't get any full body apparitions or any video of something moving around. They actually said that's something that they hardly ever get. So what they did get was some cool spots that were going on. They did get some sound effects in a different room than what they were in. When they were talking about Clifford, especially down in the parlor, which is now the gift shop, they said they felt the hair on the back of their neck standing up as if she was well aware they were talking about. in the building, she's often seen looking out the window there, kind of checking out what's going on the street, because again, she was so worried about what was going to be happening around in her street area that the house was in, that she's kind of just still checking that out. And they also reported in the bedroom where she's often seen looking over into the garden, that same feeling of being watched, like she's kind of checking out, what are you doing in my old home? Now, she's also seen down in the garden, because she used to like to put her around in the garden. So they were hoping that maybe they would catch her out there playing in the garden, but they didn't. People have walked by the carriage house as well, and there's a window at the bottom of the carriage house, and you can see through the window there's a statue on the inside. It's actually facing inside, so you would just see the back of the statue. But people have taken pictures of this window, and they've actually gotten a face peering out at them that seems to be between them, the window and the statue. So there is definitely a statue there. Yes, well, there's the back. No faces, unless you're Voldemort. And as far as I know, this is way before Harry Potter. So.
Yes, goes back quite a ways.
Yes. They have also did report that while they were on the stairs, it felt like somebody was moving past them. So you feel that rush of cold air. Somebody is on the stairs.
Experiences.
Yeah.
But that paranormal organization, George, he's very, very much a skeptic, but he enjoys the experience of doing the investigation. So even, as of the time that this story, this was reported, really recorded.
This is when ghost hunting was really just starting to get going. Thermo was just getting started to be used.
Mm-hmm. So he's been doing the community for a number of years. He said he still hadn't found quite anything to convince him.
Scientifically convince him. He's still trying to find that, so he hasn't given up.
No. I mean, if you enjoy doing something like that, why would you want to give up?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, so we're
going to
hop over to Fort Drum.
Yes, so Fort Drum, just to kind of put it in perspective, it's a large, sprawling military complex, and it's just to the northeast of Watertown. Mm-hmm. So it's a major economic engine for Watertown and for the North Country at large. Thousands and thousands of work there, amongst the soldiers and that. So it's quite the sprawling, massive complex, and it's been there for quite some time. Its history goes back to World War II, but it wasn't always known as Fort Drum. And it was in World War II, it was actually called Pine Camp. And during this time, it was a prisoner of war. This is what people don't realize, is that after the United States entered World War II, getting captured in the course of battles, which happens in basically every war. But the thing is, in European theater, you think, all these battles that are going on over in Europe, prisoners of war, where are they going? Oh, they're shipping them up to Great Britain or something like that. And some of them were going there, but
some of them were coming here too.
Some of them were coming to the United States, and Pine Camp
was
one of them.
Yeah.
Thousands of German and Italian POWs were housed at Pine Camp over the course of World War II. And, you have thousands of troops in any place, particularly back,
1946,
there's going to be illness there. This is after the Geneva Convention, so they are getting treated well, but there is going to be some disease, there's going to be some sickness, there's going to be people that did get wounded during the war that were taken prisoner. There were a number of these POWs that did pass away while they were at Pine Camp, and they did not get shipped home. That was not what happened. They wound up getting buried at a cemetery that was there on the military base called Sheepfold Cemetery.
This is not unusual. If you go out to the Outer Banks today, we were visiting a cemetery out there, and they have soldiers from Subrack that were pulled ashore and buried out there, and that's from World War II as well. So it's not uncommon to have these soldiers in our cemeteries in our land. They never made it back home. And that could be a cause for a restless spirit to not settle down and to not be at peace because he's not home. Now, Fort Drum, there are a lot of forts out there that actually will openly say, yes, we're haunted, and as people are coming and going, living on the barracks on the base, they, of course, always have these forms to fill out when they're letting them know when they need to have them fixed before the next family moves in. Some of them will actually ask about haunted and paranormal events. One family that I did read about actually had been at another fort. They had been asked about those, and I felt about when they got to Fort Drum. They had some experiences, and it was a brand new barrack, and so, you know, nobody had warned them about those, and only about 2 years old. And the fact that they had paranormal experience in a barrack that was only 2 years old was kind of very odd, but it wasn't on the phone. Experience here. So Fort Drum is still kind of starting to embrace or talk about the paranormal things that happen in and around the fort itself. So we're still searching for some more ghost stories about them, but we did find this one about.
So this one, it dates back to about 27 years at this point. It goes back to 1993. And at this point, this is the pre-9/11 era, and I had the opportunity, the privilege to be able to work on a fort for before 9/11. Military bases, you could drive right past military bases, no ID checks, nothing like that.
They asked you where you were going, and that was it.
Yeah, so this is the pre-9/11 era, and it was not uncommon for military bases to be meeting places. You know, they had all kinds of large spaces, so the community would come onto the base, and they would use it as a meeting location, and this went for the Cub Scouts as well. And so there's a local woman, and she's taking her son to a Boy Scout meeting. And as she's driving along to the base, she's driving down Route 26, and she's passing Sheepfold Cemetery. And as she's passing, she sees a man on the side of the road that's kind of, waving his hands, trying to wave her down. Now, she is a military wife herself, and, she has a lot of compassion and concern for these men.
And she's familiar with the area.
Yeah.
She knows she's near a training ground, and
yeah.
She's thinking, oh, my God, somebody's injured. He's flagging me down for help. This is pretty... cell phones, folks. And
yeah.
In 93, it's a bag cell phone that looks like a trapper keeper.
Yeah.
And we all have signals here. Trust me, I know I have one.
So she slows down, she pulls over, and as she does so, instead, the man doesn't approach, but the man kind of ducks back into the woods behind the cemetery. And she's thinking, oh gosh, somebody's hurt. He's going to go and going to get
this person.
And she waits. And she waits. And she waits. 20 minutes.
She gets two kids in the
car,
and she's waiting.
She gets the horn, picks her house window, shouting into the woods, and she does not get a response. She's certainly very concerned, but again, pre-cell phone error. She has no way to contact anybody. And she pulls away, and after 20 minutes, takes her son to the meeting, drops him off, and instead of going home, she comes back, and she continues to wait. Time she slows down, she opens the window, she calls out asking if the man is going to come back out. Never sees him again, but he was definitely there. She even asked her kids, did you see that man? And they said, absolutely, yes,
yeah.
They did. So all three members of the family saw the man when they first passed and they saw him go back in. Now, who was this man? She's up half the night because, again, military wife. She thinks that there's a poor soldier out there who is, somehow maybe got hurt or something like that. And she frets away the night. Did she leave somebody in distress? She just doesn't know. Where did he go? And the following day at work, she goes in and she starts to recount this experience to her colleagues. And one of the ladies pipes up and says there was likely one of the resident spirits that she saw. And since that day, the woman of driving past the cemetery has gone out of her way to avoid the cemetery ever since that experience.
Yeah. Now, it was reported that this soldier was actually continually seen until 2002 when the German-American Club of Watertown actually started holding memorial service at the cemetery for those POWs. After that, he wasn't green anymore, so apparently he got the recognition he was looking for.
Yeah.
And maybe he's finally put to rest.
That is the story kind of assumes that it was one of the POWs actually trying to get attention there that was haunting the cemetery. So
I just noticed we had a couple of questions pop up.
Oh, okay.
How is it spelled daylight where we are? We are way north, folks.
Yeah, we are.
It's dusk out there. The sun is set beyond the horizon at this point, so the light that you're seeing is just what's reflecting off of the water right now, and it'll get pretty dark pretty fast up here. As soon as that sun goes down, it gets dark really quickly.
Yeah.
But you can see the stars. You can see the Milky Way up here. It is gorgeous. Last summer, we were up here, and we saw a piece of space junk that was visible to the eye up here.
Dashing across the sun.
Yeah. We were like, what was that? We were actually out looking for the northern lights.
It turned out
it was a Soviet booster rocket that was still in orbit, and it just still happened to be flying overhead.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can see some beautiful things up there at night because there is no light.
There's very little light.
Yeah. Nowhere near, I mean, the closest major city is actually across in Canada. Kingston, which is still
upper river,
on the other side. So, yeah, it's on the horizon from here. So it's about, 19, 20 miles out.
Yeah.
But anyways, Patrick kind of, Great Britain doesn't have a lot of land to work with for POW camps. Well, that's half true. There are quite a few camps that were used as POW camps in Great Britain. We visited one.
The one in Scotland.
Scotland, yep.
They still have the big aluminum tin barracks.
Yep.
And they're still standing up there.
Yep.
It was really cool to see. It's kind of ridiculous. It's awesome to go see. They turn it into a baseball and art museum.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a museum, one of their museums.
Yeah. And kind of interesting thing about that, the little town that I forget, we'd have to look back up, but the little
we
town
found
that was next to.
Atlas Obscura is how we found it.
But basically, it was so isolated that these POWs and the guards and the people in town actually all collectively got to be on such good terms. POWs go in and, go to the cinema during the day and that. And since the POWs really didn't have anywhere to go.
Yeah, and it was not something easily escapable because it was literally the first town in the middle of a mountainous area, and it wouldn't try to get out.
Yeah, it wouldn't have behooved them to try to escape. So they didn't. They went into town, made nice with the townspeople, and then they came back to their personal work camp at night. It's kind of very interesting to hear that story.
Yeah, it was a fascinating place to see, and I love finding little obscure history things like that when we're out traveling, so that's what we do.
Yeah,
time travelers.
I'll be out of this year.
Yeah, bye-bye 2020.
Like the meme that's gone around, Marty, don't ever go to 2020.
Anyway,
we're going to go up to Alexandria, then we're going to go to Bolt Castle. So this is a place that is near and dear to our hearts. It was where we had our first date.
It's where we got married.
And it's been amazing to see the restoration progress that's gone on in the time that we've known each other. When we first went out there, they had been working on the renovation since 1977, I want to say.
Yes, that's when the Thousand Island Bridge Authority bought the place.
But it's a massive project to renovate this castle. It's a huge building itself, 120 rooms, plus a power station, a dugout. They had the playhouse. They had the archway. There's a couple of underground kind of tunnels of where you would actually take luggage and supplies up into the kitchen area. And, again, just massive that they had to renovate because there was fires out there. They had to pull stuff out of the seaway because of things that had fallen into the seaway during those fires or just been dropped in there when construction was stopped.
Which there's a story to that.
Yeah, we're going to get into the history of the place. But it has gone from being very desolate, graffiti-covered to almost to the point where they're going to stop their renovation. Because they're never going to fully complete it. It was never fully completed in family life, and it's never going to be fully completed past what the Volks were able to do. They decided that that should not happen. So let's talk about Heart Island. Now, originally, Heart Island is spelled like a deer heart.
H-A-R-T.
Now, when George Bolt bought the property for his wife, he actually thought that he needed to change the shape of the island and made it into a heart and changed the spelling of the name. So it's now
Heart.
Louis Bolt was the love of his life and wanted to give her a castle because he thought she was a princess. So they came up here and they summered up here and they saw the property and fell in love with it, and he promptly bought it in 1895. Construction began on this castle in 1900. Two children, Louise and George
Jr.
And Louise went by Clover. Her mother was Louise as well, but just to avoid confusion, she went by Clover, which was her middle name. And you might not have heard George Bolt, but you have heard of this hotel, the Waldorf Astoria, in New York City. He is responsible for that wonderful hotel with his wife, Louise. She actually helped him with the room and design it and choose what they were going to do to renovate it and made it into the hotel that it is today. Prior to that, he actually operated and owned the Bellevue Hotel in Philadelphia. So he was a hoteler. He raised a lot of money. He actually had a farm up here on Lovely Island that he raised cattle and vegetables on to support him too. So he owned a lot of property here, not just old castle and but they started building, and the house itself was originally 60,000 square feet, 120 rooms. And I said the playhouse, which is actually where I marched down the aisle, that has a two-lane bowling alley in it, a ballroom. It had six rooms in it for guests. It had a working kitchen in it. That's actually where the family stayed on the property. It was the first building that they restored.
That
was finished. And it's just back to the bottom of the big mansion. As I said, there's a duck coat, there's a gazebo there. A powerhouse that actually supplied power to family with generators out there. The house had a pool in it, in its basement.
Because why not?
Pre-taxes.
This one sounds so wonderful.
It's lovely, it's gorgeous.
It's so romantic.
Unfortunately, Mrs. Bolt had a heart condition. She was very frail and very weak, and she unfortunately...
Passed away in January 1904. She passes away, and George stops construction immediately.
He sends a telegram that says, Louise has died, drop everything. And that they literally did. They laid down their tools, and then left the island, and that was the way it was.
For close to 80 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, 75, 80 years. And it's just slowly decaying, slowly falling prey to vandals.
Now, the family stayed up here, but they stayed at their other property.
They had another property, which was also very nice in its own right. But they came up, but George just did not have it.
And he didn't have it in his heart to go back to the end.
Yeah.
Clover's house still stands today. You can see it on the tour. They have a huge anchor out in front of it. It's really cool. But... Again, they never wanted to see the property finished. They never went back to the property. And in 1977, it was purchased by the South Island Bridge Authority to be restored and to become a tourist destination.
And it's very popular one to this day.
Yeah.
So you got a lot of tour boats that pull up there when
I'm sure that they are looking forward to the opportunity to be able to open their doors for some people this summer whenever they can get
and
a chance.
The boats literally just started going out again
on
Friday. I don't know if the island's open.
Right. Now, with that, the Bolt Castle is said to have some spirits to it.
Yes. Mrs. Bolt loved this place so much that she decided she was going to come back to it forever. And so she's the one who was seen on the island. Many of the locals, the tourists, they claim seeing her walk along the grounds at night in a white flowing dress, which is very typical of what she would have been wearing up here for the summer, a white linen gauzy high neck gown at that point in time. That would have been a day dress, she's also seen inside of her castle that is never going to be finished, her unfinished castle. And they would see her walking along the Butters by Boathouse, which is actually just across that, a huge yacht house.
Mm-hmm.
So she's seen over at the yacht house plus the castle, and so she gets around her property.
Yeah, and she's sort of appearing, they say, within moments of her passing away.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she had a very strong tie, and it served her right, and she had been there on and off over the decades.
Yeah.
It said that even once the construction started picking up, once they started doing the renovations, it started to appear more often.
She's loving the fact that they're bringing it back to life as much as it was to life
mm-hmm.
that point in time of her death. They report cool spots. They will hear disembodied footsteps. They will feel like they're being watched to make sure that things are being put back where they're supposed to be put back. I remember going through the kitchen the last time we were there, and that was originally there when we got married. That was the bathroom area and
mm-hmm.
one of the guest areas, or, you know, guest relation areas. And so when they put the kitchen in there, I walked in there going, oh my God, I love this kitchen, okay? Because I love kitchens. But it definitely felt like there was somebody in there. I don't know if she has a companion or she just likes the kitchen that's in there. It's got a beautiful view. Over in the yacht house, she might not be the only guest that actually haunts there. Or the tour we took over there, it was reported that up in the captain's room, that there's a piano up there that is mysteriously heard to start playing randomly. Now, she wouldn't have played a piano in the quarters of her crew members, the boat. So it's possible there's a crew member who's walking down the building as well. And her boat, the Duchess, their houseboat, is actually at the Clayton Peak Museum. And it said that there are some ghosts on that boat as well. We don't know if that's her or some of the many guests that she entertained over the
mm-hmm.
years. But it's a gorgeous boat to go to see.
Yeah,
but
you can visit all of those. You can visit Bolt Castle, you can visit the Bolt Castle Yacht House, and you can visit the Antique Boat Museum here in Clayton, where you can find
the
Duchess. So, yeah. Very beautiful, very sad story, but, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, Mrs. Bolt, for better or for worse, she is still, even in,
mm-hmm.
you know, after her time had passed, she does enjoy coming back and being able to wander the grounds at Bolt Castle.
Yeah.
And there are gorgeous, very good grounds taking
place. All right, so we're going to go halfway between Alex Bay and Clayton.
Yep, yeah, we're going to come back upriver just a little bit to a private island. And this is very common up here. We're in the Thousand Islands region. Yeah, we're in the Thousand Islands region. In reality, there's actually about 1,700 islands up here.
Now, to be an island, you have to be above
yeah.
water by foot.
You have to be above water year-round, and you have to have
a tree.
So, now,
a shoal could eventually become an island.
Yeah. Now, with that, you got people that have gone ahead and they've bought up entire islands. You know, it might only be half acre or an acre, or sometimes
mm-hmm.
you know even less than that, more or less. And there's this one that's just a little ways from here. It's called Isle of Pines.
One of the top stories. There's a gorgeous house that's out on here. They have a boat house as well. It's just across from an area known as Fisher's Landing, specifically from a restaurant known as Foxy's. Now, they were invited. Actually, it was a contest that got them invited to this island. The owners, the Purity family, wrote in saying, hey, we've got a haunted island we need to see. In 2008, when they were doing the Great American Ghost Hunt, she appeared, told the story, was voted on in 2009, came up here, rolling up in their black veins, yellow fluttering. They stayed at the Edgewood Resort, and they brought a special guest investigator with them.
If you might remember, Meatloaf was
yep.
a special guest, and this was that episode. Meatloaf joined them up here.
Yes, and he had been begging to get on an episode to come hunting with them. The episode that they invited him up on, and actually a lot of the crew members didn't actually think he was going to show until all. There's Meatloaf waiting for them at the edge of it.
They go ahead, they do a little bit of background investigating, get a little bit of background information, and on the island there's two indentations. There's the house, and then there's the boathouse that it has. And the boathouse, it's a big boathouse. It has an upstairs,
ballroom
upstairs. And there were reports that people were hearing ballroom-style music and they knew it wasn't coming from Foxy's. Foxy's is very close, and of course they'll have music of their own, but it definitely was not coming from Foxy's.
Yeah, and sound does carry up here. We will hear sirens from the town over because it carries across the water. So they had to do some of the debunking while they were up here, especially with the sounds. And that was one of the things that Stephen Hanger mentioned when they were outside on the ground, kind of trying to figure out where they could hear music coming from to try to debunk what the family had been experiencing.
There is an area up there where there's a couch and a bed, and they have seen some, like, shadow figures in that area, and also up in the loft that's even above the ballroom there.
That's where the musicians used to play when it was a ballroom, but it's storage now for the family.
Yep, and the family had one congregation background. They heard some footsteps, some bay, lost space. One of the family members told us stairs, and as a response, something from the dark through a 2x4 bed.
Beware
about, and challenging, and really challenging.
And the fear out there proved that it did not want to have anybody around. They didn't want to come back to that.
Yeah.
Inside the house, when the family first arrived there, this is their great-grandfather, I believe, is who Mrs. Parody said. They lived in the boathouse for the longest time, and actually
rented
the main house to a group of local monks to live in the house and worship and that sort of thing. Unfortunately, the monks got a little rowdy and burned things at the seaway, and that got them kicked off the property, because you don't do that up here.
Yeah. Fire is bad news on an island. The thing we'll touch on that maybe another time.
Yeah. So that's how the monks got kicked off the island, the family didn't get back. But apparently one of the spirits of the monks actually still resides on the property today, and the children of the family actually have stayed with him in the living room of the big house. A woman is also heard up on the third floor and seen up on the third floor. She is seen in a window walking out, and sometimes heard in the bedroom calling out, "Please help me." She's also seen out walking in the front.
What kind of monks?
They didn't say.
They didn't specify, actually.
They didn't specify. When the Parody family was talking about it, they didn't specify. And I have not been able to find it.
Yeah, that's a good question.
That'd be a question for the Thousand Island Museum.
It would.
They're not sure they know.
But
they're not open right now.
No, of course they're not. Because
email.
Yeah.
Wonder if they have to email them.
We can see about following up on that. That's a good question.
It is a very good question. Other things that the family has said has happened, they hear unexplained noises, footsteps, shadows, objects moving by themselves, and light flickering. Now, the light flickering is something that you have to be a little wary about because you're out in the middle of the water, you see a lot of the boat lights that go by, especially at night. So that's one of the things that they decided they needed to try to debunk as well. They go through the whole setup program. They set up their cameras, they set up their recording devices and their main headquarter area. They divided into groups and they started the investigation. So, Meatloaf, Grant, and Jay were the first group in the class.
Mm-hmm.
And they went upstairs to the third floor and they decided to do a K2 session up there.
K2 EVP session.
Yeah. Now, K2 meters can register when ghosts are present. They can make the lights, there's usually 5 lights on it, when it's green to red, and you can ask the spirit to light up the lights in response to a yes or no question.
Yeah.
That session. They were doing.
They pick up on
energy,
electricity in air.
So what they were going to start doing a session up there when immediately the cameraman said, "Hey, Jay, my camera battery's dead." And it was a fully charged battery, and it dropped, and then Meatloaf looked at his camera and said, "Mine's dead too." And his audio battery was dead. Well,
so something in there went ahead and drained.
Immediately drained. So battery changes out, and they start their session. Now we know the entity up there has some juice to be able to interact, and it interacted with it. They have the spirit interacting yes or no questions, intelligent questions, and towards the end of their first EVP session, Meatloaf was sitting on the bed at that point in time, and he felt something move behind him, either getting up or sitting down. So Grant went to try to recreate this so they could figure out, was it standing up or was it sitting down? And when they decided from the motions on the bed, it was a standing up and, like, leaving. And they actually didn't have any more activity in that room after that motion had happened.
Yeah. And thanks to the questions that they had asked on and off through the session, they came to the conclusion that it was a male entity and that it actually was
the priest. Yeah, they did get a second bedroom up there as well, and Grant stayed out in the hallway, kind of observing what Jay was doing. They got a little bit of interaction, especially when they found out that it was the priest interacting with them. But they also kept hearing a banging noise. They were trying to figure out what it was, because all the windows were shut. There's no AC up there. So, and Grant was watching, and as he was watching, when they were saying, can you make that noise again, he noticed the bedroom that was right next door, the door would kind of slam a little bit against the wall, maybe 4 inches, and it was the knob hitting the wall, it was making noise. And again, it's an intelligent interaction because it's responding to the question of can you make it again, and it happened. So we know that it was an intelligent being up there. So after all that, they were going to switch up again and move to the boathouse. And Chris and Amy were the first team in the boathouse, and they had experience as well. They heard footsteps outside, and of course, the first thing they did is they checked with Tango and Steve, who were the team who was outside. Are you guys anywhere near the boathouse? Okay. So they're trying to recreate. So that's what they do. They had an experience. They tried to recreate it. They tried it to debunk it. I think it was Amy stayed inside and Chris went outside to walk and recreate, and they figured out it was inside. And they also heard a shadow figure that appeared while they were doing it.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, then later on, so the group switched up, and then Jay, Grant, Meatloaf come into the boathouse. They had a little more intelligent interaction with an entity, again, via the K2 meter, but the spirit wasn't exactly in such chatty of mood. They clearly indicated during the Q&A that it wanted them to leave the area. So they went ahead, they acceded to this, and as they were moving on, Meatloaf then noticed lights flickering in the bedroom. They investigated and determined it was just simply reflection from lights on the water outside, but Meatloaf, while he was in there, inadvertently left a water bottle on the windowsill. So they go back out, and from the couch in the boathouse, they go and they start asking, Meatloaf jokingly asked if the spirit could bring him his water bottle. But they quickly get distracted. They start doing an EVP session, a K2 session, and during the session, Meatloaf experienced an 8 to 10 degree temperature drop in the area where he is seated.
Which Grant and Jay recorded.
Yep. And so they go ahead and they record this experience, and as they're going and they're moving on, they move back towards the bathroom where they had just noticed the lights on the water before. But Grant noticed something had changed. Where Meatloaf had left his water bottle on the windowsill, now the water bottle had actually moved to the back of the toilet. Nobody had been in there.
Nobody had been in there. That was at least 3 feet of an object.
Yeah. So, based on the experiences that they had there, the team came to the conclusion that something interesting and very odd had happened there.
Yeah.
Pretty
sure it's haunted, though.
Yeah, pretty sure it's haunted. It was an interesting episode. I forget exactly which season episode, but if you look at
season 3, episode 6 is what's ringing the bell.
Yeah.
We just went.
I know it is.
You're just. Okay. Yeah, I know. Gotta go faster. All right, so this makes me kind of by surprise because I had never heard of this school and being a fucking teacher. I think I would have heard of it. This is known as the Academy Ridge in Ogdensburg, which is halfway between here and our school.
Yeah. So, it was a sprawling campus, about 237 acres, located close to the river, and
it was originally a college, a Catholic college or a university, the Vader D. College, and that was built in 1983. They closed in 1993. The Academy at Ivy Ridge opened up in 2001. This was a boarding school for troubled children, and it had a horrible reputation. After 4 years of being open, they were denied education to go at school. And things came to a head in 2005. In May of 2005, 30 students rioted and escaped from a ball class. Ended up back to the campus, most of them were expelled, 12 of them found themselves in the court system due to that riot, due to state sex and riot. Two members faced criminal charges in 2006 because they didn't stop students from beating up another child. In 2009 is when it finally closed.
Yes. All the remaining students were shipped off to another facility down in South Carolina. And then the facility was promptly sold off to a corporation out of Delaware. I don't know what they wanted with it, but they basically said that the school or
would
the facility
never
would never come back. And it's basically been
shut down ever since.
So, this very short sword experience of the academy there had left quite a mark on the buildings and on the grounds there.
Yeah. The students reported having several hauntings while they were at the academy. They would report the encountering the spirit of a young boy dressed in Mexican clothing, as well as a former nun being there, a female student who had committed suicide. They would also hear the sounds of disembodied voices, screams, cries late into the night, objects dragged through the hallways when nobody was there, cold spots, and always somebody watching them, and especially in the library.
And then there's other visitors that have also experienced issues with electronic devices, stuff turning on and off, batteries getting drained unexpectedly. You know, this basically was a hot spot of activity. It was very...
And when you think about the very negative energy that was
there. Yeah, I mean, students described it as a hellhole. It was not a place, even though it was there for, reform purposes, it did not fulfill its mission at all. Now, a lot of the stories for this place were very clearly recorded by a staff member named Richard Tupper, and he was a night watchman there.
That's
at the academy. Yeah, so he started as that in 2005, and he was there right up until it closed in 2009.
He was a skeptic. He didn't believe any of this, even though he had been told about it, that there had been several staff members who had quit because of the paranormal activity. He just didn't believe it until it happened. So he was given an easy assignment and told to go over to the second dorm, and it wasn't until later that Richard discovered that the reason why he was given it is because nobody else would go over there. They'd had too many experiences. So he was stationed by the stairwell. He was watching off to one side, and he suddenly saw a face flying at him, shouting at the top of its lungs, but no sound came out. It vanished right as it reached.
Very much a skeptic, but this was soon to change. This goes on, and as the enrollment at the academy started to drop, the second dorm wound up getting closed. Richard's supervisor decides he's had enough, he leaves for another job, and so Richard gets a promotion. Yay! And his role required him to do frequent patrols of the grounds. He had a reoccurring phenomena that he encountered by the boys' locker room during this time. When he was walking in the space, Richard would often hear a woman crying inside. Richard would step inside, turn on the lights, crying would stop, nobody is there. Other staff members eventually came forward with the same story. Some were reluctant to do so out of fear of being thought crazy, but Richard was always able to tell them, don't worry, you're not alone in having these experiences.
The computer lab was a hot spot for activity. We had to continually go through the night almost every hour and turn all the lights off again. We have very hard time to turn off. And of course, he would have to write all this down in his nightly log, things that happened.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he didn't create a check spreadsheet saying, done. Done. This all happened to me.
And then something that's kind of straight out of Silent Hill type thing. If you've ever played the game or watched the movie or anything like that, you know one of their favorite things is to go ahead and the sound of metal on metal, screeching metal. They regularly, Richard and a lot of the other staff members would regularly hear what sounded like sheet metal being dragged down a hall towards the gym. Upon investigating, of course, nothing would be found, but...
I went up and said I quit at that.
Yeah. So, and Richard and several of his colleagues, as we mentioned earlier, this boy with the 1920s garb, they all saw him on a fairly regular basis. On one night in particular, Richard was sitting at a station when a boy was suddenly next to him. The boy placed a hand on Richard's elbow and then slowly faded away. The experience obviously chilled Richard to his very core, but instead of being freaked out and running away, it actually inspired Richard to dig in and try to find out the history of who could this boy be. Richard was never able to pinpoint exactly who the boy was, but he did find reports of the boy being sighted on the premises over the course of decades, dating back to even before when the college would have been there. So this boy had been sighted on the property, on the premises, for many, many decades before the school was there.
Oldest year property. Wednesday nights, both weekday and weekend supervisors are there, and so Richard and his counterpart would often be chatting together in the hallways that they're supervising near the dorms, and both of them happened to stare down the hallway at the same time, and somebody pointed, and they both saw a shadow figure materialize out of the nearby room behind one of the other staff members who was watching that section of the hallway. It seemed to be making haunting gestures towards the staff member. Staff member completely and totally oblivious to this. It then shrunk back into the room that it was in. They looked at each other. Did you see that? Yeah, I saw. Okay, let's go check it out. They go down to the staff member, ask if he had seen or heard anything. He mentioned there had been a sound of something tapping coming out of the closet door from this shadow figure had emerged from. And again, there was absolutely nothing in the room, nothing in the closet. They when you see a camouflage, they kind of morph into a human shape. So it is quite the active location.
Hotbed of activity. Seems to be a lot of spirits there and a lot of different sounds. So, not of necessarily a place that you can go check out, not like the castle, but it's.
Yeah, you'd have to get special permission.
I wonder if they do that.
I don't know.
I haven't found any reports of anybody actually doing investigations there, but it sounds like it's a fantastic place to check.
Yeah.
Retro.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, ghost kids, what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
Definitely mess with them, play with them.
Run the ball.
Yes.
All right, so we're going to stay in Oswego, in Ogdensburg.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about the Frederick Remington Art Museum.
Now, Frederick Remington probably sounds familiar, very famous for his wet Western paintings and sculptures.
Yeah, his American art. And now the building that where the museum takes place was a private residence. It was constructed in 1810. And as I said, it's now the Frederick Remington Art Museum. His wife actually went there.
For a few years.
He didn't, though.
No, he did not.
Now, it is said she was won in a card game.
This is a story of George Parrish and his lady friend. George Parrish was an inhabitant of this house before Frederick Remington's widow.
Yeah, he was one of the well-to-do family members,
Yep, and very well-to-do just in society in general. As a matter of fact, he was kind of friends or at least acquaintances with the son of President Van Buren. He was friends with John Van Buren, and he was playing poker with him one night. And Van Buren had lost $5,000 in this game. This is back in the 1800s.
That's a lot of money.
Lots of money. And so Van Buren wagered his lady friend, America.
I don't know about your ladies, but I'd be throwing a cat fit at that point.
Parrish accepted the bet, and he won again. So Van Buren lost everything that night. And it's as unsettling as the idea was for a person to be one, this is just one chapter in the very tumultuous life of America. It's like America, but instead of a C at the end, you have a G at the end. America Vespucci. Now, she was born as Elena Vespucci in Italy in 1804, and she is a direct descendant of Italian explorer Amerigo Vespucci.
Which is America's
namesake.
So that's where we get our
She was a headstrong child as Elena, and as she gets older, she decides she doesn't want to be called Elena anymore. She decides, for whatever reason, to take her older sister's name, America, and that's what she officially is known as moving forward.
Now, when she gets out of school, she actually becomes fairy the court of the Grand Duke of Tuscany. She becomes a lady's to the Duchess. And she becomes inspired by the French Revolution, joins a local Italian nationalist movement group, actually ends up going and does battle with them dressed as a man, gets wounded, gets discovered that she's a female, is told she needs to give up the names of her comrade-at-arms for the past 2 years, and she refuses.
And so she winds up getting, ultimately she winds up getting banished from Italy. Even though she was very wealthy growing up from a well-to-do family, this winds up leading her family to basically disown her. And from that point forward, she kind of bounces around European society for a while, ultimately, being a mistress to a whole series of wealthy, powerful people across the European continent.
Including Prince Ferdinand.
Now, she eventually goes and kind of gets bored with this bouncing around Europe, and with some references from some noble friends, she winds up making her way to North America, and she travels about from Washington, D.C. to New York City, to always kind of hobnobbing with the social elite, and, she wound up, she was very, very beautiful, and wound up catching the eyes of multiple notable Americans, including kind of some U.S. senators from the time. So she ultimately wound up applying for U.S. citizenship, and however, it was denied. She wound up ultimately having to return to her former way of life. It's just a means to survive, which is basically being a mistress to the wealthy and powerful, which is how she wound up attached to John Van Buren, and then wound up getting attached to George Parrish. Now, George Parrish, even though this whole getting one in a poker game thing is kind of unsavory, she wound up being madly in love with George Parrish.
She gets in the love of her life. And at the age of 37, she moves in with him into his house in Bardensburg. It really becomes a wonderful life for her. Even though she's living in Spain, the local ladies shun her for this. She does try to come out into society with them. But again, they don't approve of what she's doing.
Yeah. And so this bliss goes on for a few years, for a number of years. But then George is a little bit of a sleazeball. He gets bored, and he leaves her behind in the house and decides to go to Europe for a while.
Well, he also inherits the title.
Yep. Details. But he leaves her behind, and, let's just say that by the time he comes back,
he
boots her out. He's found something else to be interested in. Doesn't just throw her to the curb, but he ships her off to Paris with a modest house and income. And even though he gave her means to live, it absolutely broke her heart, as you might imagine.
She actually threw a goodbye party while she was packing up to leave for Ireland. The mothers came because they were but she lived with her sister until her death in 1866, and afterward, George takes another mistress. He dies in Venice on a honeymoon in 1888. I really find that fitting.
Yeah.
but the ghost is there, and she traveled back to the house where she was most happy, when she was comfortable. And she had seen in the house, and whenever anybody tries to communicate with her, she quite very clearly says in EVPs, "I was not one in a poker game." what she's communicating with the Sackets who have come here to Crossroads is that she actually had played in this game and she had no money, and that's how she ended up becoming. So she's heard speaking sometimes. She's also creates cult bots, and she watches people. She's curious as to what people are doing in this museum now that was once her home.
Yes. So she's still kicking around there, even though she passed away overseas. That some of the happiest years of her life were when she was in that house. So it's believed that she returned there afterwards.
Yeah. So now we're going to come down to Oswego.
Yeah, we're really running long tonight.
Okay.
So
we're gonna shorten this one down. This is Route 57. I had mentioned last week that we were going to do another haunted highway.
Nice bright red.
Yeah, it's a nice dark red. I really liked it. It made me feel good. It made me feel good. I didn't put the glitter on yet. there's black and red glitter that's going on. Anyway, so this comes from 1898. William Cooper had returned home to his home in Fulton Village one night after he'd been drinking. He got into a row with his wife. He took out the shotgun, and he fired at her. He missed. She's scared out of her wits. She grabs their young child, and she takes off running to her neighbors. And Cooper tracks her down, bursts into the Smedley home, killing Mr. and Mrs. Smedley, and taking another shot at his wife. And this is where the story kind of goes one or two ways. Some say that she was killed as well. Others say that he missed, and before checking to see that he missed, he turned the gun on himself. And in both stories, he actually does turn the gun on himself and commit suicide. And the first time that this tragedy was reported was June 25th of 1898. And she has been seen running down that highway with her child ever since then in a white flowing nightgown and a nightcap. And people are just absolutely terrified when they see her because she looks absolutely
scared out of her mind.
Yeah, literally. And she will be running towards you and then disappear into a house. And people report seeing her go into a house. So
yeah.
She's most often seen in July, October, but mostly November, so that's when they think she may have been killed.
Yeah. But yeah, the sightings are so prolific, and so many people have claimed to see her over the years that even people who have not taken the drive, people who have not seen her, have accepted it as local fact. Local folklore has become fact because it has happened so often along the stretch of highways. So if you ever want to go for a drive in Oswego in either July, October, or November in particular.
November. When it's snowing, by the way, folks.
Yeah, it starts snowing up here in October, and
keep going in May.
So welcome to the North.
Yes. Yeah. It's snowed in my graduation, second graduation up here.
So we got one more story for you for this evening.
Yeah, so we're going to jump to another Fort.
Yeah, now Fort Ontario, and this again is in an Oswego area. As I mentioned earlier, Oswego was very prominent in the Revolutionary War. And Oswego is at a very strategic point there as the east end of Lake Ontario. You know, it's just a prime place to have a vacation. And Fort Ontario was first built, now it's been rebuilt multiple times, but there's been a fort there on and off since 1755, which was during the French period.
Yeah, now currently it's a star-shaped fort, but as I mentioned, it's been rebuilt several times because it's been sacked by the British a few times when they took it away from back and sacked it.
Yeah, but yeah, it was first occupied by the British, of course, because it's 1755, still the colonial era. Constructed for defense against the French that were up in Canada at the time. British continued to occupy the area through the American Revolution, and the fort was destroyed during the Revolution after it was abandoned by British forces. But it was rebuilt in 1782. British continued to hold the fort actually until 1796, well after the American Revolution, there was a British presence there. And it wasn't until,
the Jay Treaty is when they gained control of it.
Yeah. And so the American troops move in, they take over, and the fort was once again destroyed during the War of 1812, this time by the British who had previously occupied it. So there's been
back and forth
during all this time. And there was a military presence on the site right up until 1940, so going into the World War II era.
Yeah, and actually during World War II, it was a place to have U.S. troops working.
Yeah, and you can go tour it as an, it's a tourist destination state. You can go tour it. Yeah, unsurprisingly, considering the history of the war.
And this is the second place that I mentioned Tamp actually did come in and investigate. I didn't go back and rewatch this show, so I don't know exactly what they found. But talking to some of the other bigger stories right up here about this and researching through them, which I'm planning a story to talk about for it. So people witnessing former soldiers dressed in military uniforms, they hear disembodied voices, yells, sounds of children laughing, cold spots, again, sensing an unseen presence or entity, the sound of cannons and muskets being fired as well. Now, some of the ghosts they have been able to identify, one is Basil Dunbar, who died in a duel. He doesn't seem to realize he is dead, and so he's still skulking about looking for somebody else to duel. Corporal Fikes died of disease, and he makes his presence known by sudden drops in temperature. He is actually buried on the property in the cemetery there, and he's also associated with some of the folklore that says that anybody who stands on his grave is cursed to be haunted by him. If you jump over his grave, you can choose who he should haunt next. I'm not going to do it.
What is it? Any kind of
threefold?
Yeah.
happens when we're
not
getting doing tours. Thank you all very much for tuning in again.
But next week we're actually going to go off the continent and head over to Hawaii. We're going to do an entire episode of Hawaii.
Yeah. We'll be back at our normal point. We'll be back in corporate headquarters. We'll be back home by then. But we're very excited to be able to go ahead and share this little corner of paradise that we have with you.
Our refuge,
or sanctuary.
It's crazy lately, so. Yeah, we need a quiet. It's quiet up here, right?
Yeah, so. Quiet is good. Got any comments here? Oh, Patrick says he's definitely going to jump over the grave.
Of course you are.
Yep. And if you ever get a chance to come on up here to upstate New York, particularly the Thousand Islands region, there's a whole lot of beautiful locations to check out, a whole lot of history to check out.
And if you like fishing?
Yep.
You got the Seaway. If you like boating, you got the Seaway.
Yeah. And that's just covering the American side of the river.
Yeah, that's the whole Canadian side, too. There's a lot of shipwrecks right out here. And if you're a diver, this is a great place to come diving. Just make sure you check the rules out before you come and don't stray into Canadian waters because that's not good, as one of our friends found out.
Yes.
But again, it's a great place to come up and just tour around, going and checking out Wellesley Island, the Thousand Island State Park. So there's a lot of camping up here that you do.
And if camping is not your thing, there's a lot of cottages and whatnot that are always, the owners working out.
Yeah.
So you can come on up here and see the kind of place that takes you to the body. And of course, there's a resort as well.
The Edgewood is gorgeous as well. Bonnie Castle's been around for places you can come and check out the bay, and then definitely just the area is beautiful. It's great to get up here, and as you said, if you want to get out of the city, this is a nice place.
Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for bringing us along. You're welcome, Alex. Thanks for tuning in again. We're happy to have you tuning in. And Glenn, you take care as well. Thank you very much for tuning in again. So with that, we will go ahead.
We'll cheers
to y'all. And everybody take care, and we will see you again next Monday. Yes. So, all right. Everybody, have a good night.
Bye.
And baked into cakes which are passed around. make the